No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Today, I'm in here with legendary producer, talented guy, smart guy, Chop Squad DJ. How you feeling, man?
Yo, what you on, man? How you doing, bro?
Doing good, man. I met you years ago when, I think, didn't we meet for the first time when Trippie and Tato did that song together?
Yeah.
Shorty Know I Kill People.
Yeah.
Real people.
Yeah. And I seen you again, I think, at the Lakeith concert you did.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't seen you since then, for real.
Yeah.
I think we've been moving around. I be texting, like, you know, like a little what up, bro, and all this shit like
that. Yeah.
But not no real, like, building shit.
Well, you've been going through some shit.
Hell yeah, fool. You know, that's how it be, you know, growing up. That's how it be. I'm in my mid-20s, it be like that.
Mm.
I'm starting to learn. Ain't nothing permanent, but.
Wait, how old are you right now?
I'm 26, you feel me?
26, goddamn. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you accomplished a lot in that time period.
Yeah, for real. It's like I've been in this game since I was
19.
I've been inside 18 when I was a ghost producer for Young Chop.
But when you were 18, you went to college in Chicago, and that's where your career got started?
Yeah.
So a lot of people probably think you're from Chicago, right?
Everybody, fool.
Everybody.
Well, not no more, but it used to be like that. Now everybody know I'm from St. Louis because I make sure people know I'm from St. Louis, you know what I'm saying? But at first, that was the whole thing. Everybody was like, you from Chicago? And they, like, I'm telling you, no matter how I tell people, I can tell you I'm from Chicago. I can tell you I'm from St. Louis, and they're still, next time I see you, is what's up in Chicago? I'm, fool. You feel me? So, yeah.
You're just so in that element.
Yeah, that, it's like I'm around, and I really I ain't gonna say I grew up, but it's like we turned into adults together. You know what I'm saying? And that whole process was like it made us grow closer together. And it was like I just happened to catch everybody right when it was time to take off, and it would allow me to build with people.
But so were you producing before you actually went to college in Chicago? Like, what was your involvement in rap and everything before that?
Before that, I was making beats, but here's the thing, like, I didn't know that making beats was a profession. You know what I'm saying? In my mind, making beats was like a hobby, because I wasn't a big fan of video games. Like, I was, but I could never get jiggy with it. So it's like, making beats was my video game, because I'm a real, like, musician first.
I was thinking that to a lot of internet kids these days, making beats is just like a different video game.
Exactly. And that's how I approached it initially. And I was in my head, I'm like, you know, like, okay, I can get good at this. And I think what made me even learn about my program, my first thing, shit, I'm gonna say the truth. Yeah, I think Soulja Boy in 2007, when YouTube first came out and he showed the making of Crank That. And I'm like, I was just using this program, people, because I'm thinking at first it's like, you know, it's more of a, like I just said, it's a playful program, a junior program showing you how to get to that, the next program you're going to use. But no, it was actually, he making the full songs, going platinum and all that with the demo version of FL Studio, Fruity Loop. So that's what made me feel like, oh, maybe this is like a real possibility of a career choice.
Right.
My parents weren't going with that, though. No, my foster parents weren't going with that, fool.
Damn, really? Oh, so you have foster parents. You were adopted.
Yeah, I was adopted. I was an orphan.
Really?
Yeah.
So they adopted you at a certain age, or was it from birth?
No, it was a certain age. I went through a lot of foster homes and children's centers, and then I ended up getting adopted at 13.
13?
Yeah.
Damn, so was that, I mean, I don't want to pry too much. Was that real difficult? Like,
That was, you know what I'm saying? That's what turned me into me. You know what I'm saying? It allowed me to, I ain't gonna lie, I had to grow up early. But you know what I'm saying? I was on the streets at one point. You know what I'm saying? I done went through so many different foster homes. I done went through a couple boys and girls homes. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that just helped me. It hardened my personality to prepare me for the real world.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
But the beat making, like, where did that come from in terms of your personality? Like, was
me
that
me being a musician, me being a pianist, and me being like, because, like, I remember, man, my first time even learning, like, okay, realizing, like, this instrument make this sound and you can do this. I think I was at St. Vincent Children's Center in St. Louis, and I had, like, a tutor. Her name was Catherine Carroll, and she ended up, that's how I got out of St. Vincent. She ended up taking me out of St. Vincent, taking little classes, and took me into foster care.
Uh-huh.
And that's my first way out. And I see her, like, a huge piano in her living room. And I seen her play the piano, and I was like, what the? You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the piano. Like, you know what I'm saying? And that got my interest. And, you know what I'm saying, she started putting me in lessons and stuff like that. And then every foster home after that, I tried to make sure, even if I wasn't in lessons at all times, I was always growing with the piano. So about... eventually, you know, muscle memory took effect, and it was easier to play. And learning theory and shit. It's all a process, but.
Do you think that you were born to be a musician? Like the piano just made sense to you in a way that nothing had ever made sense to you before?
Yeah, because it's like no matter what I did, I couldn't get away from it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? No matter what I did, no matter how hard I tried, it was no getting away from me wanting to play music. And the easily most accessible instrument was always the piano. Mm. I go to Herbert Hoover Boys and Girls Club. It's a piano in the auditorium with nobody else in there, so I can just go in there and practice. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Talent shows, you know what I'm saying? And just any opportunity I'm allowed to be around a piano or music, I was taking advantage of it. When I met Herbert Hoover growing up a little bit more, every summer I went to Herbert Hoover Boys and Girls Club in St. Louis. And eventually, by the time I'm 12, 13, when you get a little older, they give you a little bit more flexibility. So I'm spending all my time up there trying to play that piano in the auditorium. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Getting better. And eventually, by the time I'm 15, I'm on FL Studio 4, and I'm making beats.
Right.
But my original approach wasn't even like, it wasn't like I'm trying to make beats to get songs. I was making beats to see if I can recreate a song that's out. I was like remaking instrumentals of songs that's already out.
Right.
Like my first few songs, like I said, I think my first beat, I remember, like, where I felt like, ooh, this hard. I remember it was Soulja Boy, Do Your Shuffle. It's a super old song for Soulja Boy.
Right.
And I used to just be real geeked at the whole Soulja Boy thing. And it was like, this man really making beats on the same program as me. You know what I'm saying? And it's like,
it's underrated what a huge influence he was, because he showed, like, a whole generation of internet kids that, like, this is what you can do. You can really do this from your home. You don't need a label. You just need a video camera.
Should be crazy, but I'm going to have to give him his props on that one, because I honestly did not. He made me realize this shit was real.
Mm.
Like, this ain't no hobby. You can make your hobby your passion into a career.
Because he took it to the extent of having a huge number one song, being huge, obviously rich. Like, you know, like we hadn't, it was kind of a new thing to see a rapper
to
really be
process.
Able to do that, and you saw it from the ground
up. You saw
up,
the process.
Yeah.
You got to see him trolling on LimeWire and FrostWire, 50 Cent in the, 50 Cent, whatever newest song was,
right.
Or 50 Cent in the club, and it's really you. I'm like, what the fuck? He was trolling like that, though. It's like, I think Soulja Boy the first troll, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've never, like, that's around the time, I think Rick Rowland, came in Rick Rowland, that old shit?
Right.
He used to get Rick
Rowland.
That shit. So, like, when I first, I think that's the first time I seen any of that, and I think Soulja Boy was the first troll. But beyond trolling, he's just the first person to show you that this is possible. You know what I'm saying? And that was like mind blowing for me. You know what I'm saying?
Did you, as you're, you know, a young kid and stuff in your early teens and stuff, did you imagine yourself being somebody that was going to go to college, never mind leave your city and go to college somewhere else?
I didn't even, I'm thinking I'm going to end up like the rest of the people around me. I'm going to go to, like, the people, like, I'm from St. Louis, fool. Like, where I'm from, high school, not even a necessity.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of people I know dropped out 9th, 10th grade. You know what I'm saying? Like, high school is, in my city, graduating high school is the equivalent of graduating college.
Right.
Because nobody about to make you go to college. Like, ain't nobody got no money for college.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Even if you make good grades, a scholarship only going to do so much. Unless you getting a full ride, you had a 4.0 all the way through high school. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I had good grades and stuff, man. I even got a scholarship. That's how I even got to Chicago. But before I went to college in Chicago, I was going every weekend, you know what I'm saying? And I was networking, and I started meeting people that allowed me to stay around a little bit more, come around a little bit more often. And then eventually I started being around, you know, Young Chop them, man. And we had the same mentor, this little African dude named Benjamin Funkman. You know
Wait,
what I'm saying?
So, okay, how did you actually get to, like, you were just a kid going to school in Chicago. You didn't know anybody at first?
Nah.
How do you start being around Young Chop and how do you, all these rappers
you.
And
so,
shit, yeah.
All right, so it started like 2011, 2012. I was about to graduate high school. And you know how, like, if you want to go to a school, you go to see it and stuff, what they call it? When you go see a school.
College tour, yeah.
Yeah, it's touring, but it's like a shadow or something like that. When you, like, somebody at the school and they, like, if somebody go into their school and you following them for the day to experience a day at that school, I think it's called shadowing or something
that.
And I went there and I started learning, like, okay, it's different than here where I'm from. So it's like, oh, okay. But I only at first got to see the good part of Chicago. I was all downtown and stuff. But then it was people in my city doing music. They was like, it's this dude in Chicago. They know he was. It's like, you gotta think about it. These, none of these people are superstars yet, or famous or popular. It was just about people doing something. Mm. So I'm in there with Young Chop, and I end up meeting, well, really, Benjamin Funkman, the African man I was talking about. Mm-hmm. He put us together. I'm talking about this man went out his way to pick me up from the, I was taking the bus rides, mega buses, you know what I'm saying? $50 mm-hmm. mega bus to Chicago every weekend, spending whatever money I had just to be around there, sleeping on floors, you know what I'm saying? Grandma basements, all that. So I'm meeting people, they trusted me. I'm a kid, you know, I look a lot different than I did, you know what I'm saying, back then. Mm-hmm. Back then, I was like super, like, I don't know. I was really socially awkward, but I looked real, I didn't look threatening. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I think me being the personality I got mixed with how I was looking back then, like I was real dusty as hell. Like you just know I was not a threat. Mm-hmm. And that allowed me to get closer to people and build with them. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, it went from Benjamin Funkman, we working with him, to all of a sudden, he like, I got another producer. He's going to be the hottest producer in the world. He's taking over Chicago. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, man, whatever, man. And
but was Young Chubb, like, was this when Chief Keef was already fully out? Or this You didn't even know who Chief Keef was yet?
Nah, certain parts of the city didn't even know who Chief Keef was. But wow. The South Side, he was, whoo.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He was starting to, it was almost like, I think he wasn't even doing shows nothing yet, but it was like people knew about his song. You know what I'm saying?
He had a legend, like a mystery for a while before people really like got used to seeing him.
Because
you would hear the song, see the videos, but it was like you would just hear stories about him. And
see,
shit.
Even before then, it wasn't no stories and nothing. It was just the songs, and the songs were getting traction from the radio and just getting played at nighttime and stuff. And he was like, okay. But it wasn't like, it's nowhere near like I don't like and all that stuff yet. Mm. We still before all that. He working with DJ Ken,
right?
The Asian producer. He working with different people that's helping establish him as an artist. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. It's like me and Benjamin Funkman walked me right in there with Young Chop, and really he put me, it's Young Chop brother Johnny May Cash that really was like, because like you know it's going it's like you got to be connected to get plugged in. Somebody got to trust you. Somebody got to, even to get in their doors, you have to have, I'm not going to say a likable personality, but you have to be relatable. And like I just said, the non-threatening approach and image that I kind of gave off, it made me like that. You know what I'm saying? It made me a lot more approachable to people. Because I'm not, you got to think about it. I take my head down, take my little glasses off, fool. I'm looking like a threat in this bitch. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a regular nigga with some dreads. You know what I'm saying? So people don't, you know what I'm saying? That's a lot. It's off-putting to the average person. But where I was back then, we all had these little bitty dreads. Everybody had the same hairstyle.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it was like, it was an easier way to approach people because I was, like I just said, I was like a non-threatening person in the same environment everybody else in. Right. And I worked my way up through networking. So we went from Johnny May Cash putting me, we all in there together with Young Chop, his mom, they all got this house. I'm going there every time I come to Chicago, I'm going to their house, working with them. And you know what I'm saying? Eventually.
On O Block.
This is on the South Side. This is on, I don't want to tell you the street because it's like the house is still being used and stuff. Uh-huh. But it's on the South Side, so okay. I'm going to say. And it's in the, I'm just going to say, like 89th. That's all I'm going to say. Right in the South Side, though. Right where you would think everything going down at.
Right, but so you're like a kid who, you know, is kind of naive to a lot of this stuff. Like,
exactly.
does it occur to you right away? Because, like, all these guys, even at that time, they're gangbanging.
Everybody got guns. I'm used to that, though.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I'm from the hood, so I'm used to everybody having poles. I'm used to everybody smoking. I'm used to all a lot of drug selling and drug dealing. I'm used to a whole bunch of drops going down, drills going down at any point, everybody being on go. That's a normal part of life. I done been in so many situations where the realest shit happening in front of me, I'm just sitting there like, you know what I'm saying? It's like just regular life. Like, I got stories where it's like, it's certain stories I don't ever forget. Like, one time I'm in Chicago, it's the day before I go back to St. Louis, and I'm this time Young Chop is like, so he big now. We fast forward like 9 months now. Fast forward 9 months from when I met him and stuff, he in Paris with Kanye. I'm still in Chicago though, working with all the people around him. One of his homies named King Real. We in there, shout out my boy King Real too. Shout out the whole ATMG, you feel me? So, we in there with King Real. His sister get back from school talking about she just got jumped. Now this is when I realized, like, okay, Chicago moved just like St. Louis. It was almost like this was so normal to me, and you would think it should be like a foreign situation. It was so normal, I was like, oh snap, this is really like my crib. Cause His sister got back from home. She's talking about she just got jumped. And, you know, I'm expecting King Real to be like, oh, we about to get on their ass. Ooh, bro, the whole house was like that. His mama was like that. His mama was like, we going to get their ass.
Right.
And we going to. It was like a family drill or something. It was like everybody hopped in the car, the mama, the sister, the brother, King Real, me. I'm like, where the fuck we going? They like, we about to go slide on them.
Family drill is
man,
good.
Man, what? Like they went out. We all got out the car. I'm like, I'm not about to be hitting on these little kids. Boy, the mama even beating their ass.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah, it was real.
But so you sound like you kind of always knew that you didn't want to go full gangster with it. You always stayed at a distance from it, right?
Yeah, I tried, like... You get pulled in automatically, but it's like, I ain't gonna tell on myself, but you know, you just get pulled in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like I was saying before we was like started the interview, I try to like, I don't choose sides, fool. I got like my whole family gangbangers, you know what I'm saying? Everybody I'm around gangbangers, it's like, but the minute you choose sides, you pull yourself in it.
Mm.
You feel me? Even if my whole family's something and I'm that don't mean you gotta like, I don't know. I don't cause tension, fool. I understand that we all got different backgrounds. We all from different placements. So I don't cause tension by trying to bring in my personal situation into this situation. You know what I'm saying?
If you don't have to.
Exactly.
Why would you?
Exactly. So why would I be like, oh, y'all, this and that, nigga, I'm this. What you talking about? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't got to get on that type of time because it's like, that ain't my intentions of being here. You know what I'm saying?
But so in these early days when you're starting to link with Young Chop, and you're actually, I'm just impressed by the initiative that you had to actually, like, and especially as an orphan and coming from such a tough background, that you were so focused that you were like, you realized how important it was to be around all these guys. Were you motivated by money? Did you want to be famous? Did you want security? Were you trying to really make something of yourself?
I had one goal, fool.
What was that?
Get my music out.
Really, that was the number one concern.
My number one goal was to hear my music somewhere else besides my computer. You know what I'm saying? To go in a car one day and be like, oh, that's my beat. I didn't even think about the clout that comes with it, the fame, the money, none of that. Like, I'm so used to being poor, we all used to eating off each other.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Somebody got $20, we breaking that bitch down, we all getting right. You know what I'm saying? Somebody got $10, we going to the store and we breaking it down. Like, I'm used to that mentality and that hive mind.
Right.
But it was around, I don't know, I didn't become an individual until like 2015, 2016.
An individual?
Yeah.
Cause you mean like really said, understanding who you were or just being willing to be yourself?
Yeah. Because I was cool with being in the background. You know what I'm saying? I was a ghost producer for Young Chop, and that was cool for me because I get, like I just said, my initial goal was actually happening.
Right.
Where my music is out. But then in the back of my head, I'm like, damn, well, the music out, but it's like, nobody know I made this shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, what was that conversation like? Like, Young Chop was just so busy at this point that it's like he can get beats placed pretty easily. So he's
so
like, you put this work in.
Exactly.
And then,
exactly.
But are you just getting like a flat fee? Oh, and you're not even getting points on the records and shit like that?
Fool, I wasn't getting nothing, fool. You feel me? I ain't even knowing this business like that to be made. I'm like, my music out. Cool, next song.
Right.
And then, you know what I'm saying? It's just the quality of life, watching his quality of life improve, and I'm still in my mama's basement. None of that bothered me.
You're not saying to him at a certain point, like, hey, I need to eat something.
None
like
of that,
because right?
I wasn't thinking about that. It was his manager that kind of put me on game, like, boy, you're supposed to get paid from this. I got a check for you. I'm about to fly you out to L.A. My first time coming out here.
Right.
I'm about to fly you out to L.A. We got $5,000 for you. I'm $5,000. Boy, I'm rich as hell. I'm $5,000.
Right.
I done made it. You know what I'm saying? So it was just that slow revelation of like, okay, there is compensation for your work. And I wasn't worried about none of that. I was worried about keeping. I'm like, really, me and Young Chop, like this, bro. Like, I'm talking about we eating every meal together. I'm around his mama, damn near my mama. You know what I'm saying? Like, she licking her finger and wiping sponges off my face like I'm her son. You know what I'm saying? It was like, it was a real family bond that I appreciate for life. You know what I'm saying? Like, no one had to do that. You know what I'm saying? They always made way for me. I ain't had no money out there. Like I just told you, I'm catching $50 mega buses to Chicago every weekend,
right,
and staying until I got to go back to St. Louis. Because I'm like, you got to think about it, fool. Nobody is obligated to do nothing. You know what I'm saying? So to even allow me to be in a situation where they want me to be around was a blessing for me. Because
right,
like I said, I'm an orphan, fool. I'm used to just getting shunned and being the person in the background where nobody care about.
Right.
Even though I wasn't the focus in the spotlight, for me to be a part of the situation was a blessing to me. You know
right,
what I'm saying? Like, and slowly but surely, I started realizing, like, okay, After Wayne telling me, yo, this is how it's supposed to go, I'm like, damn, well, what about this record, that record? What the, where's that at?
Right.
And then, even then, I'm not tripping over it. It's really a, like, when I started building a personal relationship with Keith, that's when I started becoming an individual.
Interesting. Because, you know, like, a lot of early producers that get in the game, they basically get fucked until they have enough success that they can
branch
then
off.
That they can actually demand what they deserve, right?
Kind of like that, but I ain't gonna say I was getting fucked. I ain't get out what I put in, but at the same time, I was getting more than what I felt like I even deserved, because this is this man's brand,
right?
And he's allowing me to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Anybody, any little producer in the world can do this. You know what I'm saying? He could have decided to work with anybody. And he like, work with me. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And that's that right there allowed me to, you know what I'm saying, network. I was able to network inside of that little circle. You know what I'm saying? So even though I wasn't the forefront, Dirk knew I made. Eventually, 2013, into 2013, going to 14, Dirk knew I'm making these beats now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Keith knew I'm making these beats now. And for me, that was the gratitude I cared about. Because now the artists know I'm making the beats. You know what I'm saying? So, but it wasn't until like music started to change a little bit to where I was able to become closer with Dirk around the beginning of the end of 13, beginning of 14. I'm starting to develop a real relationship. They starting to call me to come to studios, and then it started to become a divide between me and Young Chop, because then you got Young Chop and then you got Chop Squad.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
was it ever really like a beef or an issue, or was Chop cool about you wanting to do your own thing?
Now, I ain't gonna lie. He was not cool initially because of how it came about.
Right.
It wasn't like... Because
you were having direct relationships with these star rappers, right?
Exactly. But like I just said, like that's not what I was in for.
Hmm.
So that never bothered me, but the reality of the situation is he probably, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say he had a problem with it, but he ain't like that. Hmm. And I knew he didn't like it when Keith started hitting me directly. Now, me working with Dirk, that's cool. You know what I'm saying? Dirk wasn't his focus.
Right.
Keith was. Dirk was my focus because I felt like he was out of here. You know, I'm on every project Dirk ever put out, and I'm doing 4-5 joints on each one.
Right.
So it's like, that's allowing me to get my sound out, which is my initial dream. And then them allowing me to build a personal relationship with Dirk, it allowed me to like have individualism. But it wasn't until Keith that he made my name. He forced me to have a brand, all that. You know
so was that the first time that your actual name was listed on the credits
exactly.
and everything?
Exactly. Okay. So this is the weird part, because I was terrified, fool. Because I'm like, oh my God, this nigga just ruined my situation.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking like, what? He hitting me like, he randomly DM'd me on Twitter one day. He was like, where you at, folks? I damn didn't want to call you on top. Like, why is Keith hitting me up?
Yeah.
But I'm like, what's up? He like, boy, send me some beats.
Right.
I'm thinking like, this man hitting me. Like I said, Dirk know I'm making the beats, so I'm sending beats. Even though I'm still sending beats through Young Chop, Dirk know I'm making the beats. But Keith hit me directly like, yo, send me some beats. I sent him some beats the next day. He like, where you at? I'm like, I'm in St. Louis. He like, come to L.A. I'm like, man, what the hell are you talking about? How am I coming to L.A.? He like, boom, send me your number, boom. So, boom, I spent the whole summer at his crib.
Really?
You know what I'm saying? And that allowed me, like I said, individualism started to take form in that era. And that was about 2014. And I want to say the spring of 14, and then I spent the whole summer of 14 at his crib. And then I'm never going to forget how I got my name, fool.
Because he took your phone and changed your Instagram name.
Exactly.
Mm.
Changed it to Chop Squad DJ. And I was like, okay. And he like, and the scary part wasn't even that, because I'm like, all right, at least I got a brand now. The scary part was the project he had called Sorry for the Wait. I did like 7 on there.
Oh, that was such a good one too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man,
and that was me figuring out my sound and stuff. Not the drill sound. It was like the melodies were starting to come into play.
Mm.
And the Sorry for the Wait project, fool, that was the scariest. I mean, my heart dropped when the track list came out, the cover art, and that shit said Chop Squad DJ. But I knew the records had Young Chop tagging them.
Mm.
So then I'm like, oh my God. This shit gonna come out. This nigga gonna hate me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's saying, yo, Chop on the beat. And it's saying, produced by Chop Squad DJ. And I got my little Chop Squad tag in there that I made a long time ago. I had my homie, A-Serms, use, I guess, the girl he was with at the time. He was like, I'm gonna help make you a tag. And he just put like a little effect over her saying Chop Squad. And
right.
I was using that. And, I mean, That was a terrifying situation right there, fool. Because I was thinking, like, my situation over. Even though Keith,
young Chop was going to be pissed.
Knowing. Like, how I would be pissed.
Was it just confusion that they put his
yes,
B tag on?
That's the only
it?
Thing yeah. that did. That made confusion. Because now it's like, in the comments, people putting it like, why is it produced by Chop Squad DJ, but it's a young Chop on the beat? Because that was, like I said, since I'm the ghost producer, I'm putting out the tag in every beat.
Right.
And like I said, I'm thankful for the man even allowing me to make money off this situation, because then around that time, I could set up beat plays and stuff, and I'm selling young Chop beats, and we breaking the money down, and he allowed me to eat. You know what I'm saying? Even though I wasn't getting the, like, royalties and advances like it is now, he allowed me to eat by creating a whole... I want to say arena, a bowl for me to live in, to where I could finesse the brand, still eat. I'm still living in my mama house, but now I got some money. I can go buy me a car.
But a lot of people, when they get put on in a position like that, they end up getting pissed off and salty, and they forget about the fact that that person put you in the position,
man,
to
listen,
be able to get this successful.
I'll never
right?
forget about what Young Chop did for me. That's why you didn't see me change my name. On Instagram, it's still Chop Squad DJ. But you see my tag, it's DJ on the beat, so it's a banger. I took the Chop Squad out of my tag to make sure I had individualism. But I'm like, I'm going to forever big up the person who even gave me a chance. You feel me? Because I could have easily went and took the opposite route and signed to Mike Will when Mike Will wanted me to sign with him.
Really?
I could have pressed that issue and been one of the eardrummers.
Right.
But instead, I seen like, man... And I appreciate Mike Will for that. And Mike Will rock with me to this day. He's seen my whole transition from a ghost producer to a top 10 producer. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, honestly, that could have went any way. But I appreciate a person even, because I realized that Young Chop didn't have no producers around him. It was just him. And now I felt like that would be an easier way than me having to be a part of a team of producers.
Right.
And I appreciate even giving me the opportunity. So I'm never going to change my name on Instagram. Well, I don't know, fool. I ain't gonna lie to you, because it's like, even now, artists is like, you should change your name. People around like, bro, just change your name already. DJ on the beat, so it's a banger. Just change your Instagram name. You know what I'm saying? So, but nah, fool. I want to big up the person who put me in, and I think really beyond that, the sentiment and the feelings that name represent. It still mean a lot to me, fool, because I remember just that whole... It's like yesterday, I can remember Keith. I'm standing in front of Keith's house. I'm like, take this picture for me. And he had my phone back and say that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's like reverence to my beginning. And I'm like, I can't just be a fool-ass dude and just remove that part of my legacy.
And I feel like you're well-known enough at this point that it's like you have built your own separate identity, even
oh,
though
yeah,
the
sure.
name is obviously similar to Young Chop, but
yeah.
I don't think people...
No, not no more. It's we in a different generation now, so for sure. But back then, I'm around French Montana, and they like, this Young Chop? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? 2013, they like, nigga, what the fuck? But now it's like, they know me as an individual. And like I said, through all these years, I was allowed to build my own brand, fool. And that was the most important thing. Like, I'm forever thankful of Keith. I'm forever thankful of Young Chop. Because, like, now, bro... If you see, I'm Chop. And it's like, I stop calling me that shit. But now it's like, I don't care, fool.
Right.
I don't give a fuck what you call me, fool. You know me. I don't care no more.
When you spent that summer at Keith's house, what was that like? Were you around all kinds of crazy shit that you hadn't seen up to that point in your life? Because all of a sudden now you're in L.A., Chief Keef, rich as hell.
Oh, yeah, way different life.
Totally different
no
lifestyle.
No more sleeping on the floor, splitting 10-piece McNuggets. You know what I'm saying? We going crazy.
Right.
Around that time, Keith is Wakano crazy. I'm fucking sick of Wakano. You know what I'm saying?
We knew about Wakano from him before I even, like,
bro,
really started living out here.
He would not let that go, fool. Like, Wakano was his favorite spot to eat, and he ordering one of everything, and we just knocking it down.
It's funny, because when you actually have been to Wakano a few times, you realize, oh, this is kind of just like a regular-ass Chinese spot in the mall.
Regular as hell. That's like Panda Express at the mall.
It's a little better than Panda, but it's not that much better. Yet.
Man, that shit is like a little bit better than Panda, but under P.F. Chang's.
That's real, yeah.
It's like, just to have that flexibility of not worrying about my next meal, not worrying about where I got to go, not worrying about none of that allowed me to focus more on the creative part.
Right. Did you feel like you were like making breakthroughs and really able to like do your thing then? And also, was Keith making beats at that time? And
so I started teaching Keith how to make beats around that time.
Really?
Yeah. So me and DP Beats taught Keith how to make beats.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And it's a process. It took damn near like a whole 6-7 months. But it's like, when I'm in town, I'm showing Keith how to do stuff. I go back to St. Louis and DP come in town. He teach him how to do stuff. When he go back to his city, I come back and do the same. So we just switched out. And eventually Keith learned how to make beats for sure.
But he was real motivated to learn?
Oh, for sure. You mm-hmm. know why? This is like my honest opinion. You gonna have to ask him. But I feel like when he realized Young Chop wasn't making all them beats, he was like, shit, I can make them too. Mm. You know what I'm saying? When he realized it wasn't like a superpower,
right.
he was like, I can do this shit too. And that's kind of the same thing that happened with the videos. I've seen Keep edit his own videos. Right. You know what I'm saying?
And people and always act mad surprised, and they'll be like, I can't believe that there'll be like a picture that comes out of Keith and he's fucking with Photoshop or making a logo or something. People are like really surprised that he's not just a rapper and that he actually is just, I think that that's who he is as a person, is that
he's a creator.
He's just a creative mind.
Yeah, he's a creator.
And but it's really interesting that he's been willing to, you know, he's already successful as a rapper and then, oh, I'm going to dip my toe in all these other things. You know, that's very rare. You don't see a lot of people do that.
I mean, he wanted to be a one man band, mm-hmm. and I understand that. Like, I understand that because I feel like that as far as the production tip. I don't want to approach this shit always needing somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to have to always call the video. Where my video at? You don't want to keep calling the producer. Send me beats. And then what if he's sending you beats that ain't what you want? Mm-hmm. You learn how to do it yourself. You're gonna get exactly what you want
and make all the money.
I mean, he wouldn't even worry about that. He's rich. Mm-hmm. He worried about living on other people's time. Keith was worrying about closing his circle, removing the accessibility, and being a standalone individual that's stable and focuses on itself. I want to say a self-contained environment. You know what I'm saying? He don't want to have to let videographers and the graphics dude come over and do all this. He slowly learned. I mean, I go over there now, he recording himself. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? 40 goddamn arcade machines, 6 TVs on the wall, and he in there, like, focused as hell. Right. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, he understood the power of learning how to do it yourself, because that took away the power that other people had over you. Mm. That's the power people have over you. You needed somebody as a power to have over you that you're not going to be able to get around. For instance, say you smoke a lot of weed. You don't sell weed, so you need the weed man. You're going to always need the weed man. Mm. Then all of a sudden you get some paper and you decide to start investing in yourself.
I am the weed man now.
You see what I'm saying? Yes, but that works for every single situation, fool. Like, every single situation, I look at it like you can become a self-contained situation, self-contained person if you decide to take the initiative to do it yourself.
I think about that sometimes because rappers always want to buy some weed when they come in here. And I'm like, why don't I just buy a couple pounds and just be trapping ounces out of here? It's a whole different little hustle I could have.
For real, it is, because, like I just said, the weed man, but I mean, you Adam, fool. That sounds, I know. I don't even believe you, fool.
Nah, but I think about it because it's like, what? I could take.
You probably
give
think
me
about
the $300. I can get the ounce. Boom. This is all we do.
You probably think about the convenience factor.
I sold some weed back in the day. I know what I'm doing a little bit.
Shit, I ain't saying no shit like that on here.
No. Right. I fucking broke up a whole ounce of coke on a table that had some weed crumbs and ended up
what
with
the
all.
Bro, you snorted some weed coke, fool?
I didn't snort it. I was selling it, but hopefully.
You sold somebody some weed coke? They had like specks of weed in that coke?
Let me tell you something. Coke heads will buy whatever the fuck you give them, but if they start paying attention, they really don't want little specks of green weed dust in their fucking coke.
Do you think they'll be paying attention?
You know, if you're a coke head, I mean, you'll do anything.
For real? Damn,
there's a real deal addiction. You know, you can be picky about weed because there's a lot of weed. Yeah. Like, when you get coke, it's not like there's some other guy around the corner that wants to give you some coke. You know, this is rare.
You say this is the only coke man I'm gonna run into, huh?
Selling coke is absolutely the worst, though. I don't know how we got on this topic, but
man, I would hate to do that shit.
People who stay up till 8 a.m. doing this shit,
doing coke or selling coke.
No, doing it, but then they call you at 8 a.m. You know, this is before Do Not Disturb. The phone's blowing up.
Oh, to re-up, right? Because it's a real addiction. Well, I see what you're saying. Right? Yeah. You like. Oh, yeah, so that means the coke man on point.
Weed is a luxury to a certain extent, you know? If you don't, you know,
if
people
weed
people
a luxury,
weed,
what's
but,
coke?
But coke is so addictive that it's like, you know, if you have a pound of weed, like, you might smoke a bunch of it, but you can
you're
go to bed.
Eat it.
Yeah, like people don't have leftover coke. They right. do it all.
And you say you can go to bed after that. You saying, like, after you get done with that coke, you need some more.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Weed will put you to bed.
Coke keep you
coke
up forever.
Coke means you're not going to bed.
Oh, damn. That's right. That's crazy, fool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true, though, but that's what we're saying, bro. Like, Keith learning how to do everything himself, he understood he cut that middleman out. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to call the man at 8 a.m. You got my video ready tomorrow? I'm trying to drop Tuesday. You know, none of that.
And I think that is really, like, who he is as a person, is he's somebody who wants to be able to be by himself, be creative, work on
man,
his
he's
shit.
A really
he don't
want
to have
person.
To hear from nobody.
Yeah,
he's
a really
know?
Reserved person, fool.
Yeah.
And that, and I admired it. I kind of learned a lot from that, because me learning it early on, I became less dependent on other people. for my craft. Like, I'm not a real big fan of collabing and depending on loops like a lot of producers do and stuff.
Because that's the whole wave now.
I'm surprised you even know about it. That's crazy. Right. But that's the whole wave of producers right now. They all want loops and all this. I can make loops.
You can do that all day, right? Because you play piano, so you can sit there and do that in 5 seconds, right?
You feel me? So that it kind of separates me from other people where I don't need people. You know what I'm saying? And it weeds me out from the crop because since I can do this on the spot, artists are more inclined to contact me directly instead of me having to go through their team because now, like it's the supply demand thing we were just talking about. Now that you got somebody that you know you can do this stuff right in your face without any interruptions or taking 2 hours to make a beat, since they know that now, they like, I'm gonna call DJ. Like, I can call so and so, but we're gonna be in this thing for 3-4 hours. I'm gonna call DJ. We're gonna knock this out in 20-30 minutes and have a hit in an hour.
It seems like there's a lot of people who make beats basically as a hustle, and that you're somebody who actually like cares a lot about the music. And that's
like, I got the bread now, fool. So I care about the content, the quality, and the consistency now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not questioning what I can do in the situation. I want to make sure I repeatedly give that same quality over and over. You know what I'm saying? I want to make sure my name hold that weight, and that's why I kind of cut down my accessibility to people. You know what I'm saying? That's why you was surprised when I ain't walking here with nobody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't want to be that person. Like, I'm telling you, I learned so much from Keith Fool. It's like I understand the power of an individual. And when you give that power away, you become dependent on people. And becoming dependent on people, all type of situations come up because you can't control who around that person. You don't know who that person know. You don't know the environment that person come from or the environment that person bring to your situation. You know what I'm saying? And individualism is big to me, fool. And it didn't become big until really like Keith them showed me the power of individualism. And I didn't, like I said, I was terrified becoming Chop Squad DJ because I didn't want to mess up my current situation. I was so content on the situation that I was already in. Even being in the background, I felt like I could accomplish my goals because my goals wasn't nothing but just to get my music out. It wasn't to get no money. It wasn't to become famous. It wasn't for the clout. It wasn't to capitalize off anything. It was just for me to get my music out. And the fact that that was already being done, I felt like you got to think about it. I'm an orphan, fool. I couldn't see myself past 18. You know what I'm saying? And I still say all the time, I can't see myself past 30. You know what I'm saying? I can't see myself even at 30. Because most of my friends died at 20, 22, 24, 23. My childhood friends been dead for years. My best friends from childhood been dead. Like, I'm so used to, like, people being temporary, fool, that it's hard to see my future. You know what I'm saying? And it's like what I've been going through. It's like, as I'm getting older, it's like, I got to change my personal orientated goals so that way I can grow as an individual. Because my goals is no longer to get my music out. My music is out. My goal is to create a long-lasting legacy that means something. That even if I die at any time, at any day, y'all going to still remember me. Mm-hmm. Y'all going to remember my name. Y'all going to remember my work. It's going to mean something. It wasn't just a blip. It was an impact. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference in terms of like building your own personal brand. Like, how do you become? We were having a conversation about different levels of producers and different levels of artists, and how if you're Kendrick or you're J. Cole, you can disappear and not put an album out for 3 years.
Just talking about,
it's all good. You're Metro Boomin, you can kind of disappear off the scene for a little while.
You're gonna put that work in.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're gonna put that work in.
And I think that they've done just such amazing. All these people doing amazing jobs building brands. And what they represent is so strong that it's very, very difficult for anyone to really like
even replace that.
Start knocking at the door of being on that level.
Exactly, and that's the type of time I'm trying to be on. I'm trying to make it hard to even replicate me, and that's the whole thing. Like I see a lot of now, like my sound is incredibly popular in the music right now. The piano under the sub bass or the guitar under the sub bass, and I see a lot of people trying to mimic and replicate that, but still the artists hit me up. You know what I'm saying? Like me and Polo G. Like Polo G knows. Like a lot of people tell him that it sound like I made it. So you start locking in with me.
Everybody wants some nice little piano dancing around on that shit. Yeah. I was thinking about that on the new Pooh Shiesty album.
It's a whole bunch of that.
It's like he kind of like raps to the keys.
Yeah, for sure. And that's like, it took a long time, fool, for me to even figure out how to do that formula, fool. Like it wasn't popular to do that. Like when I was doing all these piano beats, trying to separate myself from the drill movement, people looked at that shit like it was too feminine, too soft. Even Dirk, when we put out these records, they, man, he losing it. He ain't the same no more, but he's growing, preparing for the next wave. And when that wave hit, Dirk is is him now.
The Dirk thing is mind blowing. If you actually think about how crazy it is that he was kind of like, you know, nobody considered him to be like at the number one spot in the Chicago drill shit. He was always kind of like a runner up to like one or two other people.
Everybody thought he was the background.
And now his career is so ridiculously huge. He's so popular. Like, what to you as someone who knows him really well, what do you credit that to?
Growth. Him focusing on him understanding that you have to show growth to your main demographic. You have to feed your main demographic, show consistency and growth, and grow with the time. You can't stay stagnant, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing that separates him from a lot of these other artists that are around. They stay stagnant and get comfortable and content in the situation that they're in. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Dirk never did that. He understood when it was time to go, when it was time for his next album, I got to grow. He went to Atlanta, started seeing how people navigate it, started seeing how they move around, you know what I'm saying? Developing a bigger network, you know what I'm saying? And growing with that network to where your sound and your work ethic grew with that network. Mm-hmm. To where your way of making music even changed, you know what I'm saying? And to me, I feel like personally, to even see him go through that, like I was just telling him that. I literally just texted him a couple days ago, like, fool, this shit crazy. He was like, I know, bro. Cause it's just like, you gotta understand, fool. I was just sitting in the studio with Dirk a couple years ago and people talking about he over. You know what I'm saying? We talking about how many people gonna be at the show. It's 200 people at a show. You know what I'm saying? And I always knew. From day one, when I seen Dirk with the long ass dreads, you know what I'm saying? When I met him, I knew he was gonna be him. When Young Chop was focusing on Keith, I knew Dirk was the voice because I understood melodies was the future. And I knew Dirk really wanted to go into the melodies, but he wanted to retain his street respect. So now that melodies are the focus, he can be him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He can be him without no predication of, man, do you think they're gonna feel this way about me? Without no judgment, without no preconceived notion of, man, he's soft. Now he know that you can still maintain their respect and have that gangster mentality and still represent that in your music without having to be so aggressive at all times.
But now Dirk is in a crazy point in his career where he can be the dude who is basically like kind of doing stuff that almost reminds you of Future. And then he also could be the dude making Back in Blood with Pooh that's like the hardest street record
Dirk,
of the year, right?
I say it all the time. I say Dirk like the new Future, but it ain't no replacing Future. But
right.
It's Dirk.
No disrespect to Future. But
never.
Consider him in the category
exactly,
of that is crazy.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That category, just that tier level. Mm. You know what I'm saying? That's what I really mean when I say that, because I was just in the studio with Future a couple days ago. That man's incredible, fool. He worked like Dirk, fool. He worked just like that. And I know Dirk learned that from the people around him, the people he was working with, slowly over time to really embrace you being you. Don't be afraid to grow and to show that growth publicly and through the history and the discography of your music is huge. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because you can go back and literally listen to Dirk changing his sound from Remember My Name to Just Cause Y'all Waited One to Sign to the Streets 3 to, you can see the growth. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And just seeing that growth, man, it's difficult to talk to Dirk sometimes without getting emotional, fool, because I just remember, man. Because I remember the situation I was in during that time, you know what I'm saying? And the uncertainty of the situation and to understand that you got a stable spot in the game now, fool, I wake up every day like, it's like a weight off my shoulder, fool. Mm. There ain't no replacing me. And that's that weight off my shoulders, like, man. The uncertainty of what I'm gonna do in 4, 5, 6 months is not there no more.
I mean, what Dirk's accomplished is even crazier when you consider the fact that he's basically had a huge percentage of the people he cares about taken from him over these years.
Man, I'm watching it as it happened, fool. You know what I'm saying? And it break my heart to even see that, fool. Like just to even having to go through that. And like I told you. Like I told you when I walked in here, we was talking, like, it's difficult for me to even talk about certain situations like that, you know what I'm saying? Because a lot of my childhood friends, fool, and like even bro, like, bro was my best friend, you know what I'm saying? And when he passed away, that I put my all into bro in the last 2 years, you know what I'm saying? Everybody I walked into, just telling them, like, man, King Von up next. And just to even see that, you know what I'm saying?
So tell us about how you got introduced to him. I'm assuming Dirk introduced you?
Yeah, Tavon, for sure. So I met him before, but he wasn't no artist, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And he was just like one of the members, you know what I'm saying? Like, I see him, we are talking all that, but it wasn't no music. I remember he getting out. I remember he called me from jail, and Dirk like, hey, he trying to talk to you, Dirk. And I'm talking to him. And he like, man, I need you to turn me up like you did Dirk, man. I need you to do like you did Dirk, man. Fuck me like you do Dirk. And that was the same approach that T Grizzly came to me. So I'm used to people saying that. You know what I'm saying? Like, turn me up like you did Dirk. Because Dirk was really the first artist I got to show. Like, I will grow you from plateau to straight up, you know what I'm saying, out of this world. And for me, that make me feel good for artists to recognize that. But what make me feel even better is to see the gratification the artists get from being able to see themselves grow. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, I met him through Dirk, and I took it serious, but it was like, think about how many artists around us in OTF and like the little sub labels that these artists got that they want to put on other people. And it was like, we made our first song, it was Beat the Body. And I'm like, oh yeah, I fuck with this song, it's cool. I'm seeing it grow traction, but it was like, at the same time, I'm seeing Von not take music serious in real life. So I see him recording that song, but then in real life, he worried about how he gonna make some money, how he gonna keep this going, what's this, that, and the third. And I understand that. And I told him, and he would call me all the time, like, man, fuck with me, send me some more beats. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm seeing some more beats.
You probably seen a lot of artists like him who are talented, but just too in the streets that it's kind of hard for you to imagine them being able to really do it.
Yeah. So eventually, by the time Crazy Story came around, I told him, I'm gonna give you this beat. I'm gonna give you some beats, and if you don't put some real money, effort, and time into this, it's not gonna be no more beats. And he was like, I swear I'm gonna do that. He's like, I don't want to do nothing else but this. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, you gotta show me, fool. I hear you talking, but you gotta show me. And he would send me record after record, and I gave him like 4 beats, and he did them. By the time we had the first 4 songs, I was like, oh, I think I can do this.
Really?
Because really, before that, before we even made them records, he was working with Young Chop. You know what I'm saying? And I'm walking in the Chop House, and Von right there, they working, and I'm seeing like, okay, cool. And then I don't know what the situation was, that they stopped working, and he called me like, man, I need to be like Dirk, fool. I need you to treat me like, but he really wasn't, when he was really saying I want to be like Dirk, he was really trying to tell me he wanted me to treat him like Dirk. He want that reverence. He want that respect. You feel me? He wanted me to care about his music.
Right.
And I was like, if you want me to care, you got to show me you care. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, if you don't show me you care, it ain't no how, it's no way that I'm going to care.
Right.
And eventually, by the time, I want to say maybe 4 months after us really doing it, I'm like, man, I'm going to help you grow, fool.
Because Crazy Story was such a huge song, but then at the same time, it was like, I felt like a lot of people were kind of like, is this just a gimmick? Does he only have one flow?
And that's what we kept talking about. And I was like, let's plan it. So I started actually planning it with him. From my experience with Trippy, Dirk, T Grizzly, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna really show you how to grow as an artist, but you gotta listen to every single thing I say. Like, if you don't listen, fool, yeah, I'm gonna let you do you and I'm gonna step back. He's like, bro, I swear I'm gonna listen. And he listened. He's one of the only artists I ever worked with where I got a relationship with artists where I could always be like, no, that ain't what's up. Or, man, you go back and do that over. But with Von, he cared if I liked every single bar.
Really?
We'll make it together. He'll send me voice memos, and when he send me a voice memo, fool, I make a hook to it, and then that'll be the hook, and then he used that voice memo as a verses, and we did 40 songs like that.
Really?
Oh yeah, for sure.
But he was sending you voice memos of just what he thought the hook might sound like.
No, he'll send me voice memos of just, it wouldn't even be a hook. It would just be I can't even play it, fool. Like, it'd just be a voice memo of him rapping, and what I would do is I send him how it should go on the beat. I send him, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I gotta see. Let me see if I can find it. I got even everything, almost all these little, like, let me see. You know what I'm saying? This is him and Moneybagg Yo.
And you could do,
and so what I did was really, I told him the formula of me and T Grizzly making beats, because I see him and T Grizzly had a. It was, I look at Von like a mix between T Grizzly and Lil Durk. Yeah. Because T Grizzly's approach was, he wrote so many songs in jail, he just don't know what to do with them. So I said, you know what? Instead of us making new songs, send me them, put them in a voice memo, say them, and I'll make a beat around it and I'll put it together for you. I'll tell you.
Do you have to actually put that in the program and then start beating the. You just hear it and you.
Yeah,
you
kinda... I heard this, I knew what type of beat should go with it and I just went and made the beat.
Right.
And then I sent him a voice memo back on how the flow of that should go on the beat. You know what I'm saying? And like, for instance, like the I Am What I Am song with Fabio Foreign, I had to beg this man to use a drill beat. He was like, hell no.
Really?
He was like, I'm not dancing on these bitches, fool. He was like, I'm not doing that Pop Smoke shit, that dancing shit. He was like, bro, we doing real drills. I'm like, listen, fool, you gonna do this, fool. He was like, man, how you know it's gonna be hard? I say, bro, what if I told you it wasn't hard? Man, all right. So I sent him the I Am What I Am, song. And I was like, you gotta do it like that. So look, he in the shower.
Oh, what else am I?
He in the shower. Singing in the shower. Singing in the shower, and I gotta make a song out of it.
Wow, you know? That's badass to not even turn the water off before recording the fucking voice memo. I would have turned the water off.
And I'd be like, look, nah, we ain't doing it this way. That's too slow. That's the same hop you use on this one. Take them words, but do it like this. And that's how we move, fool. And it's like, he listened to me. Wow. Everything I told him, he's one of only song. He's one of only artists I ever met that just, he listened to me, no questions, no nothing. He like, if that's how it should go, you know what I'm saying? He used to say like, is that how Dirk them did it? Mm-hmm. And then eventually he understand, like, I took an amalgamation of two different formulas and made your formula. Because right. He would just pull out this nasty looking ass notebook. I'm like, what the fuck is that? I'm like, what the fuck is that stain? He's like, man, I don't know, bro. I had it in jail, fool. Yeah. Like, I done smacked a nigga with his notebook before. I'm like, what? He's like, I smacked the nigga with the notebook. I'm like, fool, what the fuck? Nasty, slimy looking ass notebook with brown pages. And he got a whole goddamn 30, 40 songs in there. So I'm like, listen, fool, instead of us having to go in here and hope we catch a vibe, send me something you know you like, and I'm going to adapt it to how it can be palatable to other people.
Did you ever see him punch in, or was he always writing stuff beforehand?
We did both. So Basically, all the songs you hear, like it's two different stages for us. So we made two albums in his kitchen while he was on house arrest. Mm. He couldn't leave the front porch. You know what I'm saying? So I come to Atlanta while I'm working with Dirk or whoever I'm working with. I come and go over his house, and it was treacherous at first because I'm like, fuck. I just got to sit here all day, can't leave, can't do nothing. But eventually we developed a chemistry that allowed us to really communicate with each other without even using words.
And you're used to being fly ass studios and shit. And you know what I'm saying? You're in a living room.
And this, you got to think about it. This is a year ago. So right. I'm me already. And it's like, all right, whatever, fool. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I really want to go. But it's like, I believed in him because I understood, like, he wanted this so bad that he could be still trying to find some way to scam or whatever he wanted to do. Even while he on house arrest and he can't get no money and Crazy Story popping, but no, he want to make more music. And that showed me, like, okay, you're not just taking this shit as a joke. This is an opportunity for your life to change.
Right.
And through that process, we made three albums. You know what I'm saying? And every song I produce, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I every beat he had, I would either take a beat I already got and tell him this should go to this, or he would send me them voice memos, and I'd make a beat and send him a voice memo back of how the song should go. You know what I'm saying? And that, it worked. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate just that whole situation. I appreciate, but above anything else, fool, and even the fact, like, it saddens me, fool, that, like, he not here no more, because his literal dream was this. You know what I'm saying? Like, his dream was this.
Right.
His dream is people to appreciate his music. You know, and like, I could never get, like, while he was alive, I could never get him to understand, like, fool, you just gotta listen to me, and it's gonna happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, eventually he understood, though, fool. Like, he stopped questioning what we were doing, and he kind of started trusting what we were doing. You know what I'm saying? Because he understood that I'm not gonna go nowhere. At first, he was kind of scared of me going somewhere, fool.
Really?
He was scared of me, like, stop fucking with him at any moment.
Were you scared of him going somewhere else?
Like, nah, he needed me. I knew it.
Really?
Yeah, because this is how I knew it. Because when I'm not around him, he'll call me on FaceTime and just sit on FaceTime with me. I'm like, bro, I'm about to go. He's like, bro, just stay right there. I'm like, fool, we're not doing shit.
Yeah.
We on my fucking battery about to die. He like, we can't just chill on the phone? I'm like, and do what? He like, we can't just chill? I'm like, and then that's where I understood, like, He just want my my energy. He understand that. Like, I kept him on the music vibe. Right. And then when I'm not around him, he in the studio, he make me, he'll sit there, I'll prop my phone up, and I'll be doing something else wherever I'm at in the country, and he in the studio like, all right, play that bar back. You fuck with that bar drop? I'm like, it's cool. Hold on. Go back, do it again. You fuck with that part? You know what I'm saying? So every single song we did like that, to where that trust was built. And like I said, I just, let me see. Cause he did the same. This is what else I wanted to show you. He did the same. The one thing I like about Bonnie, he was so genuine, fool. He did the same thing Dirk did for him for other people.
Really?
Man, look, this is him like, hey, this is my homie from jail. This is, it sounded just like Dirk telling me this to him, about him. This is my homie from jail, man. It sounded like he really didn't even have no faith in him, but it was like, I'm gonna do what I told you I'm gonna do.
Right.
He was like, man, I told him I was gonna get him a beat from you. He got a song. This man is in jail. He like, man, you ready? Go rap on him. Look, listen. Can't even hear this shit.
This is just a random guy in jail.
It's his homie in jail, and it just sound like he go, it's just like he spitting in the mic or something. Yeah. And he's like, "You got that?" I'm like, "No, nigga." You know what I'm saying? Like, but I see the intent was for him to show the same love that he got shown.
Yeah, yeah.
To definitely. See his intentions, to see his heart was just more. That was more encouraging to see the realness. Like, fool, I remember. Von was so mad he couldn't make no money while on house arrest because he couldn't leave. And he didn't want to over-exacerbate himself or overextend himself and burn out himself by just making himself available and accessible to everybody. Mm. So he couldn't just do features. He pissed. Like, man, I got all this going on and I can't do shit. You know what I'm saying? And in my mind, I'm like, whoo. So don't worry about it. Because when you get off this box, fool, you're going to have all this bread waiting for you. Right. He didn't want to hear that shit. That shit was eating him up inside, right? But just to see. I for instance, I'd give him some bread. Like, he'd be like, hey, fool, book this lift for me. Lift $200. Mm. I'm like, what the fuck is this? He like, just book it for me. Book it for me. Fool, I remember just the little bitty things I would do just to make sure he wouldn't go out his way. The minute he got in the position, he tried to do the same for me.
Really?
Even though he knew I was established, I didn't need nothing. He just wanted to show that the love I gave him was reciprocated. And not just received, but was given back. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to give back that love. Like, so when he started getting some real paper, he was always trying to buy shit for me. I'm like, why don't you buy shit for me? He was like, bro, you done did all this. Woo-woo. And then, like, this is what, like, man, I'm like, this, like, it damn near. I damn near got emotional when that man was like, because it's like, I didn't tax him on his projects. Like, his first project, when we did our first project, when we did Grandson Volume 1, I didn't tax him for that. And he knew I was getting a huge number for beats. Even then, this was a year and a half ago, I'm still getting 15, 20 a beat. Mm-hmm. So he knew I could have taxed him. But no, I'm like, man, nah, man, close to free, fool. Just because I knew they didn't have no budget like that. And then LeVon James, when that came around, I kept the price the same. And I could have, man, you popular now. Ooh, no, I know this is not the time to eat. Man, without me having to talk about it, without me having to say anything, he let me charge like 4 or 5 times that amount.
Really?
For Welcome to O'Block.
Once it was signed.
Yeah, when he got, when Welcome to O'Block was about to come out, he was like, fool, since you looked out for me on that, I'm about to let you eat. I don't care what you charge, you know what I'm saying? The whole budget me, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, understanding that somebody, not only, because it's like you can show somebody some love, but in the back of your head, you're like, do they even care? Mm. Not only did he care, he wanted the love to be felt back because he wanted me to understand that he appreciated it that much, you know what I'm saying? And just going through that was like, man, mind-blowing, fool. It was like, damn, this fool is real as hell. How can somebody be this real? You know what I'm saying? The only other person I've been around was real like that, to where, like, it's like an unspoken thing to, like, I understand that, like, you my homie, and I don't want to tax you, and I want this to keep going, so I'll take a loss on the overall just to make this keep going. Not only did he understand that, he understood that. And he made sure he gave that back when he got in position. And he didn't have to. Right. He could have been like, bro, you just charged me this last 2 albums. Why you ain't just... No, he was like, fool, this is your time to eat.
And it happens all the time where, you know, a producer will basically go hard for an artist, and then as soon as they blow up, that work with every artist or every producer. They're working with a million different people. They don't give a fuck about you.
Listen, I begged him to get in the studio with everybody.
Right, I was going to say, what was your attitude on him working with other producers?
He didn't want to.
Really?
Yeah, he didn't want to. He was like, fool, I don't give a fuck about these niggas. And I'm talking about, I'm giving him Weezy beats. I'm giving him Jetson beats. I'm giving him ATL Jacob. I'm giving him whoever around and popping at the time. Twisted Genius. I'm putting them in the studio with these people. I don't want to be in studio with these people, fool. And so eventually, he didn't open up until Welcome to Old Block. And during the creation of Welcome to Old Block, I would have to literally call these producers and make them sit in the studio with us. And that's the only way that they actually got a records with Von. You know what I'm saying? Even when he would do stuff with like Hitmaker and all them, he didn't want to use the records because he was like, that ain't even me, that's them. You know what I'm saying? And it's like his comfortability level with me was a different way. Even when he in the studio with anybody else, he would just sit there and make me sit with him. Like, fool, just stay here. Like, or he'd make me mediate the session. He'll be in a different room than the producer and make me go back and forth and mediate it. Like, I don't want to talk to him. You do it and then you bring it to me. You know what I'm saying?
Damn.
And, bro, like I said, fool, it's only a handful of artists I got that connection with. And it was like, during that process, it's not a lot of major artists that fuck with Von. And I'm gonna make sure I say this shit. Like Swae Lee, he really fuck with Von. Like, before anything, he was asking about Von. Trippy Red really fuck with Von. You know what I'm saying? Really sat there and asked about him. Like, how can he contribute? What can he do? Let's get a song together. They sending me songs back and forth for them to get on. You know what I'm saying? 21 Savage really fuck with Von. You feel me? Lil Baby really fuck with Von. You feel me? Like, it's people that Moneybagg Yo, like, I remember. Like, Moneybagg Yo with no question, boom, hopped on whatever we gave him. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, it's certain artists that before he had that clout from Welcome to Old Block or that huge exposure and that people expected him to have, and then to his untimely passing, before any of that clout or false gratification or appreciation, these are artists that rock with him that were in a way different bracket than him and tier than him, but still reached out because they saw what the trajectory was.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy the level of progression that we saw in terms of, like, from Crazy Story 1 to all the way up to the release of
Welcome to Old Block.
That's like, it's crazy, like, how serious he seemed like he was really willing to take it. I remember, like, listening to his earlier stuff and thinking, like, this is good, but it doesn't sound like he's 100% figured out his style yet. Listen, and then Welcome to Old Block, that is one of the most hard Chicago rap albums in so goddamn long. It's a real
classic.
Because
he let
me
sit there and control it. Like, he didn't, like, a lot of times, I remember artists, it's like pulling teeth. It's like tug of war, not pulling teeth. I ain't gonna say pulling teeth. It's tug of war. You want your influence to be felt, and they want their influence to be felt. With Von, after him seeing each project go up gradually, any bit of progression for him was good. You know what I'm saying? It was appreciated. So by the time we got to work on Old Block, he's like, you just tell me what to do, fool. I'm listening. Like, go ahead, go crazy. Everything down to me picking the songs, you feel me? And me telling him who should go on what and sending who what the features and how and when. Like, he allowed me to have that control to where, I mean, all three of his projects I executive produced. But this project, I really feel like I executive produced. Because I made him, like, it's like you can't be real with an artist sometimes. You know how, like, whatever stigma that the public got on that artist, you can't just set flat out say that to that artist because they'll feel a way. Von wants you to do that. I was like, fool, they keep saying you making the same shit over. I'm like, so this project, we're going to do Melodies. And then the next project, we're going to do King of Drill.
Right.
You feel me? The next project is going to be called King of Drill. And that's because he finally understood that he can approach the drill wave without sounding like the New York wave. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, with the I Am What I Am, he realized, oh, that is hard. And I had to convince him. I had to send him a 2-minute voice memo of me playing the beat and rapping his lyrics to how I wanted to go on that I Am What I Am beat for him to actually even listen and believe that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And through me doing that, the trust level that we got together, fool, is unbelievable, fool. And I appreciate every second I had with him. I'm in my last conversation with him. With some shit I ain't never, like, just unbelievable. It was like the last couple months with Von was unbelievable because, like, what I always wanted in my entire career was for me to have my own artist from, not just like Dirk. He my artist for sure. Right. I'm gonna always be associated with Dirk. I'm gonna always be on every project he ever put out.
But he was already established by the time you started working with him.
You see what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like, he started, like, he had This Ain't What You Want that broke him out. I broke King Von out, you feel me? And just to have that level of appreciation and control over the situation man, I felt like that was my real new goal. My real new goal was to have my own artist. Mm. And that's, I knew I had it, you know what I'm saying? And it was like T Grizzly is my artist for sure. But like you just, he had First Day Out and then he came to me to make sure his sound go. It's like our artists would have like Trippy Red. I made Topanga. In order for me to have Topanga, Trippy had to have Dark Knight Dumbo. Mm. And people would start sleeping on him and that's what made him do some big shit like that. But before then, it's like he still had Dark Knight Dumbo. Fine ain't had nothing.
Right.
I did his first song and his last song. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I remember my last conversation with Vine. It was, I was doing a favor for the head A&R over at 300 Saleem. And I was in there with Shot Glizzy. So we going to Paramount Studio X, my favorite studio out here.
Mm.
Tell me why I walked up to the studio, I looked up, and I saw the billboard for Welcome to O Block.
Mm.
And it said, Welcome to O Block, executive produced by me. And I remember me telling Vine, fool, I'm going to make your ass a star, fool. Give me 1 year, you're going to be on billboards. So I looked up, damn near started crying, fool. I called him. I said, fool, look at this shit. That nigga said, he said, nigga, we did it. Nigga, he's like, I'm straight on now, fool. He's like, fool, you straight did that shit, fool. He's like, I love you, nigga. You straight did that. He's like, you did exactly what you said, fool. He's like, I owe you, nigga. I'm like, you don't owe me shit. We going up. And he was like, man, I love you, fool. I was like, he's like, I'm going to be back out there in 2 days. I'm about to do this show tonight. I'm going to call you after the show. That was it. That was the night he died.
Show.
Yeah, it was the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's weird, fool, because it's like, I'm not even sad. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm mad as fuck.
Mm.
And it's not, it's like, I'm not even, and it's not like I'm mad at a person. I'm mad at Vaughn because he left me out here to do this shit by myself.
Mm.
He left me to keep this shit going by myself. And that shit, man, that shit hurt, fool. It's like, I can't listen to the music no more. I can't, it's hard to talk about him without feeling like jittery and nervous. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because it's like to talk about my best friend in past tense feels so weird, fool. Mm.
Damn. So when all that shit was playing out in the media, when the video comes out and everything, you say you're mad.
Hell yeah.
You're mad at him for how he handled it, that he didn't
think it through further? No, I was mad at how, I know Vine. So I can't act like that wasn't him.
Mm.
He reckless as hell like that to where he stand on business.
Right.
So I understand, like, that's how he moved. Vine is a real, he honor-driven person, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, he been in jail, so he do a lot of fighting, fool. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And he felt, I know he liked the little boy niggas. More than anything, he liked the embarrassed niggas, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not mad on how that went down. I'm mad on what we got to do now, you know what I'm saying? Do this without him.
Right.
And to help somebody dream continue to live on without them being here is heartbreaking.
Definitely.
Because he literally put his life on pause to get better at this. He put his life to the side. He put his personal life. Like I told him, you're going to have to sacrifice your social life to do this shit.
Mm.
And he did it. And right when he did it, that's when we started getting that traction. You know what I'm saying? It was like, fool. Man, I love that nigga so much, fool, just because I ain't never had nobody show me the same love I gave back. They always gave me some love back, but it wasn't the same love I put in.
Mm.
He made sure I got the same love I gave to him back.
Right.
And it was like, damn, fool. And Vine was King, Vine was two people, fool.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I was King and he was Vine. You know what I'm saying? That's how close we was, fool. You feel me? Like every single song he ever put out, we made together.
Right.
Even if I ain't make the beat, I gotta make him rap on the beat. Tell him this is your type of beat. This is you. This is the sound I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I really felt like he was two people, fool. Like, I was King and he was Vaughn. You feel? Because for real, like, it was like this. Like, he wouldn't make a song. Even if he go, if, like, even close to when he passed, I ended up coming out to L.A. because he got tired of me. He got tired of him coming out here and I wasn't out here.
Mm.
Every time he want to come out here, I'm still in Atlanta doing something or I'm in somewhere else working with somebody. And eventually he was like, man, come now. I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to drop what I'm doing. Just come fuck with you. I'm like, the album come out Friday. I'm coming, fool.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And we was able to just sit there. And for the first time ever during that little situation, we was able to sit there and appreciate the work we done. Because we can't never talk about it like we did something because we always felt like we ain't did enough.
Mm.
But when we did Welcome to O Block and he saw that people was rocking with him the same way he wanted to rock with people, that's when it was like, oh man, he felt like he was living his dream. You feel me? And he would just do stuff like he understood that his voice held weight now, and that's what he always wanted. But what's even more important is that the voice behind that, the whole weight, the respect is from the music, not the streets.
Right.
You feel me? It's something that he can actually stand on without having to worry about ducking your tail or hiding your back.
Right. But that's the question is, did you see him struggle with or have a hard time leaving the streets behind in terms of acting like a celebrity?
He never left the streets behind.
Mm.
He never acted like a celebrity. Hell no.
Right.
He was always a reserved person unless you knew him. You know what I'm saying? Unless you know Von, he reserved as hell. He won't even talk. He like in some shit like this, we just sitting right here, he would be on that couch sitting there not saying a word, fool.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? He wouldn't say a word and just sit there and peep the scene until he addressed. You know what I'm saying? But if he know you, man, he the most outgoing, goofy-ass dude you met in your life, just outrageously, unnecessarily funny.
Right.
Like, he just do silly shit just to do it. Like, he the type of person to be like, fool, what if I just... He was like, you on point today? Yeah, he was like, what if I just steal your ass and take your chain right now? I'm like, shit, you ain't leaving this room. I bet you on point. You know what I'm saying? He'd say shit like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like... Dude, he just enjoyed life, and he was just so happy he wasn't in jail.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Because it almost felt like he was afraid of just going to jail and not coming back. You know what I'm saying? Even when he was in jail and when he was calling me, he was like, man, he was like, yeah, they fuck with me. He just wanted to update on his career.
Mm.
He didn't even care about what people thought about him or how they thought it. He cared about what people thought about his music. Like, they fucking with that shit? Throw that shit going. Hey, he'd call me one day, hey, what that video at now? What, how many millions? Is it a million yet? He was on that type of time. He only cared about him progressing in this. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's hard to get a person to fully drop everything in their life and focus on one thing without them seeing immediate gratification from it.
Mm.
And the fact that he had that determination, consistency, and dedication to keep it going no matter what was going on in the outside world that wasn't revolving around music, that was big as fuck to me, fool.
Did you ever tell him you... putting a little bit too much of the street shit in the
music.
Hell
yeah. It's songs. I say, what the fuck is you on? Bro, it's songs. It's songs we got now that, like, it's a song we got. Like, the song.
You've heard all the bars that didn't make it out.
Yes. And they is bogus as hell. And that's like when we took it to the O, and he got the dude with the dreads playing. You know what's going on. Like, he got the dude, he's shooting, dude threw a brick at his car, he hopped out, popped him in the head.
Mm.
Like, that type of shit. He would try to tell his real stories and kind of, but it was like he wanted to act like that wasn't real when it was too verbatim.
There was an element of truth in all of it that was pretty
obvious.
It was hard to look past.
Yeah, it was obvious. Like,
and say what you will about, you know, Chief Keef, Dirk, they both, you know, handled beefs a little bit in the music here and there.
Yeah, he put that.
But
in the
it
music.
Was never, you never really heard them put what they're dealing with in the street in the music, at least not lately. Maybe in the day a little
bit. Nah, he liked to embarrass his ops on the record.
Mm.
He only did that because he knew they would hear it. He wanted them to feel it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
But he also had to know that the fans are going to resonate with that, and that the fans, if you're going to be a rapper, you're basically turning yourself into a superhero, and if you can create a supervillain for yourself,
man,
then you can really be telling them a story,
man,
right?
Man, King Von the type of person to bring a pole to school at 13, fool.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what me and Herb was talking about. He knew it was real when Von walked up to him in school. He was like, boy, you know them niggas in here. And he was like, he had flashed a pole or something. He was like, Curb knew every day from there it was up. He was like, oh, we bringing guns to school? You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, it's on now.
Oh,
he's like,
man.
Everybody brought guns to school.
Oh, man.
And he was like, Von was the one to start that off. Because he was like, you know them niggas in here, boy? And then flashed his gun. He was like, what the fuck? So this is what we doing? He's like, everybody went and got poles the next day. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, Von, that type of person, he always wanted to be a trendsetter, but it was like, he finally able to be a trendsetter in a positive way.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Von ain't never, he only like a terrorist because he got terrorized.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody lose their fair share of battles. It was like, Von worried about that war. He knew how to play chess, not checkers, strategically do things that are just way more detrimental than a fucking bar. I mean, way more detrimental than a fucking, Than doing a drill. He gonna have to do some shit to where Your best friend liked the song and he dissing you in it. You see what I'm saying? But right. You can't help because the song fire.
That's the ultimate revenge.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like your cousin liked the song, but the song about you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's way more disrespectful than somebody shooting at you, because the shooting gonna be over. We gonna play this record every chance we get. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So just to see like him be able to turn a negative situation and a negative connotation on people that he come from, on the people that represent from where he come from, just to change that outlook and to be like, you can turn this around, but only if this is really what you want to do. Because you, actions speak louder than words. You can say, I want to be a rapper, but you scamming half the time to fund this shit, and you into it with your baby mama every day, and low-key, you still got a pack you're trying to get off. That ain't you really want to be a rapper. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's you deciding to make rapping your hobby. You being a rapper is you dropping every single thing that's outside of music. You know what I'm saying? If it ain't revolving around the advancement of your career, you dropping it. You know what I'm saying? So when he finally did that, it allowed us to really not just go close as individuals, but us to even grow as musicians. You know what I'm saying? Because I grew in that. And it's not like I grew musically, but I grew as far as learning how to even create the foundational basis of a relationship with an artist in a different way. You know what I'm saying? Approaching it more of a personal standpoint instead of being a broadened standpoint. Because, like, normally when I approach artists, I try to think about how other people treat them and stuff. And now, like, through me working with Von and T and Dirk and them, it's like, even with Trippie Redd and Swae Lee, like, me working with them way more hands-on, I realize that the relationship's way more important than just you sending a beat out or they knowing who you is. Because somebody can know who you are, but they don't even know you. Mm. And just that realization to me helped me change my outlook on how I approach my relationship with artists.
Mm. Yeah, so you worked so closely with Von and saw all the success, and it was taken from you so quickly. Like, could you imagine yourself having that same kind of relationship? Is that something that you're looking for? Are you always looking for artists now at this point? Are you really looking forward to finding an artist where you can sort of create the backdrop for all their shit?
Oh no, fool, but I do know one thing. I'm focused on doing what he asked me to do when he was alive. 2 weeks before he died, he was like, fix my relationship with T Grizzly and do what I did for him, for T, like I did the first time.
Really?
Yeah, he asked me to, like, out of his mouth, like, bro, fuck with him, because he was like, you, him and Dirk, the reason I'm fucking with you.
What, so you and T Grizzly fell out at a certain point?
No, hell
or
no.
Or he fell out? Fix his relationship with T Grizzly, what do you mean?
He meant fix. We weren't, me and T Grizzly used to be like me and Von. Now me right. and T Grizzly like me and Von is now. We talk every day, all throughout the day, no matter what. But Von started to change because it was like, you know what I'm saying, people go their own ways. And it's like the way you want your career to grow, if it don't go with how it was already going or how I thought it wanted to go, I'd probably fall back. And it was like, I didn't just fall back. We both kind of fell back. You know, T focused more on getting his real life together, the personal situations that went on in his life, and him being affected by that, he kind of became more reclusive, you know what I'm saying? And it didn't have nothing to do with me. But so when he meant fix my relationship, he really meant get back to how it was. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't ever had no argument or falling out. I love my brother, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, he asked me to get back close with him. Mm. And he was like, do that like you doing with me, fool, because that's the reason why we working. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, all right, get on this T Grizzly song then. Mm. I hear you talking that shit, but you going to hop on this song? Man, he did that shit so fast, fool. Mm. You know what I'm saying? He's a real genuine person, fool. And that's what I'm doing now. He asked me to, like, just turn T Grizzly back up how we was when we made our first album. Like, I produced T Grizzly for whole first album Activated. You know what I'm saying? And it was he was like, get that vibe back. That's what he really meant. Get that vibe back where we were close like that. And that's what I did.
I assume you did the Dirk and T Grizzly project too?
I did the whole thing. Mm. Yep. I did the whole Bloodist, and then I did the whole Super Vultures with Dirk and Reese.
Right.
And then, so it's like, I understand that the relationships are more important than the music now. Because the music is always going to be there, but relationships and people are not. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I make it way more effort for me to be hands-on with not just the artist, but just to hang out with him and chill. Like, me and NLE Chopper. Like, me and NLE Chopper talk every day, you know what I'm saying? And he know, like, I really appreciate him, because, like, when I was going through with Vine, he would just call me to see what I'm doing. He'd just come out to see how I'm doing and make sure I'm straight, you know what I'm saying? It ain't got nothing to do with music. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, with Dirk, I hang out with Dirk. It ain't got nothing to do with music. With T. Grizzly, we hang out. It ain't got nothing to do with music. It's helping us build our bond as individuals together.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's more important than me making a record, because I can make a record with you any day, but this bond that we build is going to last the rest of our lives.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
No, it's so true. I definitely feel like that. Like, because I do the podcast and I just am so often meeting new people and talking to new people, that sometimes that's the part that I miss, is that actually of like forming like a real friendship and actually just being around people, because it's so like, okay, I got 6 interviews this week. I got to be spending time getting ready for each one. I got to actually do each one. I got to think about it when it comes out and stuff. And it's like, sometimes it just pushes me further and further away from the truth or the reality, which is that through all this, is like the relationship is really the most important thing.
I'm telling you, fool. I learned that. I learned that myself, bro. I learned that, and it was like, I learned this before Vine passed, and that's what made me get so close to Vine, because I understood. Like, me and Vine got real close when I understood. Like, that, he don't want no producer. He want a friend, fool.
Mm.
And it was like, he wants somebody who gonna actually understand this process with him and go through it with him. Like, he didn't want no producer. He just wanted a friend, fool, because it ain't, you don't got people who are genuine who can become real friends, fool. People always got hidden agendas and undercover intentions. And you, and using discernment, you got to be able to peep that from a distance. And Vine had that ability. His discernment was very, very high. He understood how to read people from a distance and see if their intentions were positive or negative before they even had an interaction with each other, based on how they move around other people.
Mm.
You feel me? So that's what I do. I use discernment and just move throughout my life with a relationship-based formula. Like, focus more on my relationships, man, because it's like, they always gonna put out that project, man, but is they good? Mm. How they kids doing, fool? Like, they care. And it's like, artists start caring more about what I got going on in my life. Like, what you doing, fool? Like, why you ain't got no kids yet? Ooh, dirty. And you better hear, like Byron told me, you better hear up and get you a baby, fool.
Yeah, because you seem like you're so focused on the studio that I wouldn't be surprised if you had neglected other parts of your life at times. I feel like if you're a real deal producer and you really are in the studio 12 hours a day with all these different artists every single day, that it's probably easy to forget about like having a relationship and shit.
Yeah, last night, and it was Fetty Wap and T. Grizzly. They both in the same studio, Studio A and Studio B. They next door to each other, and I'm going back and forth the whole night. I do this in real life, so I'm not afraid to say that my social life, you know what I'm saying, got diminished from this. You right. know what I'm saying? This became my social life.
And that's why you've been successful, is because you put everything else on hold.
This became my social life. Me building my relationship with these artists became my social life. And not only did I learn to appreciate that, that's okay with me. You know what I'm saying? I'm cool with that, because I understand that through me doing this, it's going to create generational wealth from when I do want to start my family. It's going to be there. You know what I'm saying? I won't have to neglect my family because I'm trying to maintain whatever I got going on. I develop a foundation for the rest of their lives as well as mine.
Yeah, because like now I got a baby and I used to be doing this shit every fucking day, all day. This is the only thing I was doing, was working on what we were going to do with content. Now it's like, I want to get home. I want to like clear a day out where I can just be with the family and shit. And like having that balance and being willing to accept that I'm not going to be going 100% with my career because of the fact that I have other things in my life, that's an additional layer of challenge, you know?
For sure, fool. I just appreciate genuine people, fool. And Vaughn was one of the most genuine people I met in my life. And he was unapologetically genuine. Mm. He didn't care if you didn't like how he moved, because he was still going to be him. And that's the type of person I am. I'm the same around everybody, fool. Mm. I don't play both sides, and I don't play the two-faced card. I'm not some weird ass dude in front of these artists, reserved as hell, and in real life around my homies, I'm an outgoing, you know what I'm saying, people person. No, I'm the same around everybody, fool. Mm. And that little bit of authenticity is what allowed me to be around every artist.
Mm.
Because I'm not trying to put on no act. I'm trying to be me. I'm being me.
It's almost impossible for your beats to be so hard that people are gonna want to be around you, even if you're a fucking dork. You know, like it's like it's got to be a combination of talent and personal skills. You know.
Yeah, and it's like that vibe you create with that artist is gonna get the best records. You know what I'm saying? Because now you and the artist are on a similar wavelength to where mentally and emotionally y'all understand where y'all trying to go with this record or where y'all trying to go with this vibe. Mm. Instead of you just throwing on some beat and guessing if the artist is in that mood. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the original approach. The original approach is, let me get your email, bro. I'm seeing some beats. You know what I'm saying? And hope that day you on that vibe.
Pray.
You know what I'm saying? Hope that day you like this beat.
And know that when you're playing those, that they're going to listen to those beats in the studio and they're going to leave each one on for like 10 seconds.
Exactly. No.
That's tough.
I'm going into sessions because I got personal relationship with artists. I know the vibe. I'm playing the first beat they rapping on. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I'm not getting three beats in and they making a song.
So you don't have like your day where you make 30 beats and then you just email them to motherfuckers. You're mostly cooking up on the spot.
I'm cooking up on the spot and sending directly to their phone because I have a real relationship with them. You know what I'm saying? I don't gotta send it to your email. I'm gonna send it to your phone and I'm like, heart which ones you fuck with, bro, because I know the different vibes that be in on different days, and boom they heart that, boom, I know that they're using it, and then they send me the song back. You know what I'm saying? They used to be my big thing, fool. Like a long time ago, four years ago, I learned not to be so nice, fool, because I had Lil Durk come to my city and he was doing features and stuff, and then we wasn't so careful on the features. We wasn't careful with the integrity of the audio. And somebody took the session and then started trying to jug the session around the city. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Then the song come out. And he like, nigga, you stole the hook. You sold this. They saying they pay. I'm like, nigga, I want some money from the beat too. You know what I'm saying? Fuck that. I want some money too. And he looking at me like, damn, so you sold them neck? We recorded this at the studio with you. You know what I'm saying? And so I learned, fool, like, I learned that about the integrity of the records and stuff is more important. I learned that and the reason why I even allowed that to happen because I'm not on my shit like I should be, you know what I'm saying? And I focus more now on the relationship aspect because I have more control of the records. Now artists trust me to give me the sessions and trust me to have the MP3s, the waves, and get it mixed and all this. Before then, it was more like, get the session, we gone. You know what I'm saying? Not me. He telling his engineer that or something. You know what I'm saying? But now, since the relationship is right with everybody I decided to work with and I build the right way, it's a more organic flow. You know what I'm saying? They understand that I got – it's no hidden intentions. They understand that the intentions they got for the records is the same thing I got. Mm. I want this to come out at the highest quality possible. We all get it right. We all got the right bag going, and we all get compensated, you know what I'm saying? And the way we deserve, you know what I'm saying? We get proper compensation for the time we put in, you know what I'm saying? And since I got that relationship with artists now, it's a lot easier for me to maneuver. And it became less about just getting some records in. It became about getting the right records in.
Building something.
Yeah.
Okay, I hate that we have to cut this a little short. Maybe we should definitely do another one of these at some point.
Yeah,
but we got a couple other interviews after this. Yeah.
Yeah, we got part two coming.
So my last question, though, is just how would you describe what you want to be remembered as, and like what you really want people to think of, you know, 10 years from now when they look at your career, like what really stands out to you that you want people to know about you?
Man, I just want them to know that I'm a genuine person that's a hard-working individual, and I got this out the mud. Like, nothing was handed to me. I had to work for anything I ever got put into, you know what I'm saying? Nothing came easy with greatness, you know what I'm saying? And me understanding that, I always tell all artists and producers, you one song away from your life changing. Mm. And with that approach, it changed my life. And I want to be known as the producer who really make these records from scratch and really develop new relationships. And I'm a musician. I want to be known as the producer who's a real musician. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not just a beat maker. I'm a pioneer in this, you know what I'm saying? I helped pioneer the drill movement and switched it over to the melodies, you know what I'm saying? And I want to be known as the person who's a real musician, a real hardworking, dedicated, grown man that was passionate about his craftsmanship more than just the money. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I want to be known as like to put a musician who pushes the culture forward in a way that opens the door for a more broader audience for the next generation. And that's what I want to be doing. And I hopefully I'm portraying that in the actions that I'll be taking now. You know what I'm saying?
No, definitely. I mean, it's so It's good looking at your career because your career really shows how somebody could just get their foot in the door and then just really keep finessing and just really find his way in the game, you know, because you could have just got a couple records off with Keith and them and just sort of fallen off. There's a million producers who did that. But yeah, the fact that you're still going and you're still like really taking your shit to more and more of a higher level, I mean, it's definitely awe-inspiring.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, fool. And then I just want the artists I work with to go down as ghosts, fool, because they really are. And it's a reason why I see something in these artists. It ain't just because they decided to work with me. It's because the passion, dedication, consistency, and talent that they really put in to take the time to grow their hobby into a career and take that career into a legacy.
Well said.
Yeah, for sure. Man, I appreciate y'all for letting me do this, man. Salute to all the real ones out there, man. Free all the guys, man. And you know what I'm saying? I do this shit for St. Louis. You know what I'm saying? The city that, like, everybody be sleep on. You know what I'm saying? We more than just Nelly. You feel
me? Yeah, you going to turn Nelly back up one day or what?
Man, me and Nelly been working, fool. I ain't no hater, fool. You feel me? I appreciate everybody who came before me. So I just want to be known as, you know what I'm saying, the producer that really put St. Louis back on the map. You feel me? And that's what I'm doing. Like, I want y'all to go listen to goddamn The Voice Deluxe right now. That new Finesse Out the Gangway with Lil Durk and Baby. Y'all go listen to that, man. New music on the way. More vibes on the way. And I pray for consistency for everybody who watching this. You feel me?
Well said. I appreciate it, man. Top Squad DJ, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Like, comment, subscribe. NoJumper.com if you want to support. We're going to get them on the Condemna.
Follow me on IG. Yeah, I can't wait for that. Follow me all on day. IG, Chop Squad DJ. Follow me on Twitter, Chop Squad DJ. Chop Squad DJ everywhere, you feel me? DJ on the beat, so it's a banger. It's on.
Easy. Appreciate you, man.